So I want to hear about your patient with the IDH mutation, but one final question about FLT3, and I was just kind of flashing on this. We did a multi-tumor program that we do every year in New York, and one of the modules was on acute leukemias. We had Harry Erber and Wendy Stock there, and one of the more interesting questions we posed to the audience and to the faculty was, how do you manage a patient with a FLT3 mutation who's not a candidate for intensive therapy, an older patient?
Ah, we just had one of these. So we had somebody in their 80s who presented fairly sick, actually, you know, some degree of heart failure. Forget if he had also had renal dysfunction, but was certainly both for age and comorbidity, not an induction candidate. Do you use venetoclax azacitidine in this patient? Do you use a FLT3 inhibitor frontline? You know, I think one problem here is, again, it's all anecdotes and all of the studies are small. There's been about 20-something patients on the frontline venetoclax azacitidine study that had FLT3 mutations for whom we have data. So it's not a huge N, but you know, the data on those patients is they often had a co-mutation in nucleophosmin. Virtually all the patients with nucleophosmin mutation responded, to the tune of like 90%. So the remission rate's actually quite good, and the side effects, you know, are not all that different than what I've just described. It's quite manageable. The challenge, however, is either maybe because of the FLT3 mutation or because of development of FLT3 mutations, we've seen treatment failures in terms of relapses with that approach. So it really gets down to, you know, do you want one therapy that just sticks and you get a very long treatment duration, or can you sequence these? Gilteritinib is approved as salvage therapy after prior remission or with primary refractory disease. You very reasonably could say, I'm going to use venetoclax azacitidine. If the patient responds, continue it as long as you get response and benefit from it. And at the point of relapse, switch then. That's what the data would suggest. That's what the label would say you should do. I can say, again, anecdotally, before gilteritinib was approved, we often would use sorafenib and azacitidine to treat patients like this, particularly when they present with really aggressive disease, hyperleukocytosis, and as I said before, that's a risk factor for tumor lysis, and it's hard to get their white count down with, you know, without using grams and grams and grams of hydroxyurea to the point that the patient can't swallow anything. They get such bad mucositis from the hydroxyurea. That's been an issue if we're trying to tee somebody up for venetoclax, knowing that we have to get their Y count down very low. In this setting, I have actually used sorafenib and azacitidine with very good results, again, with a small number of patients, and it's not published yet. There is one paper of frontline sorafenib azacitidine data from MD Anderson. The data looked very good. More than 70% of patients went into remission with or without full count recovery. The durability of those responses was comparable to what's been seen on azacitidine studies for people who go into remission, but just more of the patients went into remission. In my experience, I've had patients go a year or two before they relapse, and in an 80-something-year-old, that's good if you can tolerate the sorafenib. Now, there's an ongoing study looking at gilteritinib frontline. With or without azacitidine was the original question. It was a 3-arm study. They've condensed it just to 2 arms, azacitidine versus gilteritinib azacitidine. We don't have that study open because we don't like the control arm. We wouldn't want to withhold venetoclax from a patient who could potentially benefit. And for that reason, I think it's going to be hard to enroll that study in the U.S. But there will be data soon about giving gilteritinib with azacitidine more than just the safety cohort, which has been reported, and it was tolerable. And the response rate was quite high, actually not all that different from what was seen with the larger study giving sorafenib and azacitidine. So to answer your question, what's the right answer? We don't know. What would I do? I think it sort of depends on how easily we can control the white count. If it comes down very readily with hydroxyurea, I'd have no trouble saying our standard approach is to give venetoclax azacitidine, and I do that. It's on label, and we've had patients do very well with that. If they progress, I switch them to gilteritinib at that point. Or we look at a clinical trial if the patient, again, is very advanced and aged and not a candidate for transplant, knowing that, again, in relapsed refractory FLT3 mutated AML, survival is really quite poor. And while it's longer with gilteritinib, it's not necessarily years and years of experience in terms of saying we get lots of patients to long, long survival.
So I'm remembering when we asked the audience through a poll question what they would want to do. There were a bunch of people who said the obvious thing to think about, which would be azacitidine venetoclax plus a FLT3 inhibitor.
Let me put it this way. It's planned. Everybody is talking about that's the kind of next obvious study that we want to do. Have we done it anecdotally? You know, I hear anecdotes here and there. I would not want to do that off a study if I really didn't have to, for the simple reason that you see a lot of cytopenias with gilteritinib alone. You see a lot of cytopenias with venetoclax azacitidine. We don't know for how long to treat these patients. I would be very cautious about doing that triplet without at least some feasibility and toxicity data, knowing that it really could increase toxicity for infections would be my main concern from potentially rather significant myelosuppression, which is a predicted overlapping toxicity of these therapies.